All right, the correct Reed Hall time is 9 o'clock, so we're going to get the Infrastructure and Tourism Appropriations Subcommittee called to order. Ms. Sabrina, please call the roll.
Vice Chair Williamson. I'm sorry, Chair Williamson.
Here.
Vice Chairpersons Malika.
Here.
Representatives Arrington.
Here.
Bell.
Here.
Chaney.
Here.
Daly.
Here.
Harding.
Here.
Ranking Member Hart.
Here.
Representatives Lamarca. McFarland.
Here.
Mooney.
Here.
Placencia. Roma. Silvers.
Here.
Glossberg.
Here.
Quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Sabrina. I thought that there was some information that I wasn't told about, but there is a quorum present today. Members, thank you for being here. Everybody in the audience, thank you for being here. If you have a cell phone, please make sure that you turn it off or turn it on to vibrate. If you are speaking today, please make sure that you have filled out your appearance card before you speak. And this morning, already last committee, we heard from the Department of Transportation, Highway Safety, and Military Affairs. This morning, we're going to hear LBR presentations from the final three agencies that are under our purview. That's the Department of State, the Department of Economic Opportunity, and the Division of Emergency Management. We should have plenty of time to get through the slides, if you'll just let the presenter get through their presentation, and then we can ask questions to each agency from there. And we're going to go ahead and get started with the meeting this morning. We're going to start with the Department of State. And Secretary of State Laurel Lee is with us this morning. Madam Secretary, welcome, and you are recognized.
And for having us here today, we're going to switch out our slideshow. Thank you for your accommodation. Also, thank you, Vice Chairman and members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be with you here this morning. I will share today the top 10 budget priorities for the Department of State in the coming year. To begin, our number one item for your consideration this year relates to the R.A. Gray Building, which is our principal office location for the Department of State. Many of you all have visited. It is the building where we house the Museum of Florida History. The Department of State is requesting $10 million in non-recurring general revenue for funding of the renovation and reconstruction of the R.A. Gray Building Plaza deck. This deck, in addition to being the plaza deck out in front of the building, it also serves as the roof for the Museum of Florida History and the Archaeological Conservation Lab in the basement levels of the Gray Building. The ceiling here has leaked since 1977. There have been an ongoing and continued set of projects in an effort to repair those leaks and abate the construction challenges. Those have all failed, so it continues to be actively leaking through the present. We have assessed that this poses not only a risk to damaging the artifacts and priceless objects that are contained in the History Museum, but is also a life safety issue for the staff and the public visiting our facility. These funds would replace the concrete decks surrounding the R.A. Gray Building, and that is our first issue. Number two is construction and expansion of an artifact curation facility. In this item, we are requesting $13,776,029 in non-recurring land acquisition trust fund authority for curation, for construction of an artifact curation facility. The purpose of this facility would be to accommodate the department's collection of artifacts. At present, the department has over 3.5 million artifacts in its collection. Some of those are on display in our museums. Others are on loan to sites and facilities around the state of Florida and around the country. We have, for example, one of the largest collections in the world of Native American dugout canoes. We also have some fascinating objects that were recovered as a result of shipwrecks around Florida's coastline, such as cannons, anchors, and other items. Some of these are large objects, and at this point, we are simply out of space to house these objects and to continue to take items into our collection so that we can conserve and share those objects with the public, as is part of our statutory mandate at the Department of State. This new facility would allow us to expand the capacity to continue this work and would also allow us to bring the public in to see and experience much of the work that's happening at our facilities. At present, again, these facilities are in the basement at the R.A. Gray Building or out at the collections facility at the Mission San Luis, and this would allow us to create a public space where the work of our conservators and archaeologists can be more readily accessed and observed. This project, some of you may recall, was partially funded 2 years ago by the legislature, but that was the year that we had a lot of economic uncertainty, and it was ultimately vetoed by the governor. Item three is Florida Voter Registration System Modernization. This would be modernizations to the Florida Voter Registration System and also enhancements to the online voter registration system. Here we are requesting $4 million in non-recurring funds in federal grant trust fund using the Help America Vote Act election security funds. This would allow us to make modernizations to these systems. We are in the midst of a multi-year project to modernize the Florida voter registration system, which includes an examination of the underlying network, hardware, software, and the operational aspects of that system, and how we process voter registration and ineligibility review. During this present fiscal year, we were appropriated HAVA funds for hardware upgrades. The request for this year would be used to upgrade and improve the software. FERS has not had a major rewrite since its deployment in 2006. Priority will be given to fully implementing changes to workflow, also some of which was necessitated by legislative changes surrounding voter eligibility. This funding will also allow us to make continued improvements and enhancements to the online voter registration system. That is something we've continued to work on in earnest, and just this past week had a workshop with many stakeholders to discuss the user experience, what we have already done to improve and harden that system, and our plans to continue to improve it going forward. Fourth is our HAVA election security grant funding. Here we are requesting $8 million in non-recurring budget authority in the Federal Grants Trust Fund for use of Help America Vote Act election security funds for sub-grants to supervisors of elections. $1 million of this funding would be used for a one-year subscription to the Albert Network Monitoring System. This is a solution that monitors not only state networks, but nationally and internationally for traffic and helps us ensure that we are in the best security posture possible. This funding would allow the counties to draw down those grant funds to support their membership in Albert for the coming year. This also would contemplate $7 million in a sub-grant program to supervisors of elections for voting technology enhancements and voting accessibility under the ADA. These items are designed to ensure that we continue to have secure, fair, efficient, and accurate elections. Number five is the cultural and museum grants. Here we request $5 million in non-recurring funding in general revenue for the cultural and museum grant program. This is the grant program that awards up to $150,000 for nonprofit tax-exempt Florida arts and culture organizations. It's designed to support general program activities of an organization engaged in conducting, creating, producing, presenting, staging, or sponsoring multiple cultural exhibits, performances, or events. Grantees match awards dollar for dollar with cash and in-kind contributions. As you all are aware, we review these grant applications very closely to ensure that they meet all of our eligibility criteria. They go through a competitive process and peer review panels to make sure that they are an appropriate grant recipient. That process was just going on this past week. So typically this item serves as, in essence, a placeholder until such time as we can get to you the grants list so that you can review that list in its entirety and assess what amount of funding you find to be appropriate in the coming year. Our arts and culture organizations and partners are back open for business, and the stages are lit, and they are very much hopeful that they'll have your continued support and encouragement in the coming year. Next up is our campaign finance database. The department requests $2 million in non-recurring general revenue to modernize the processes and programs for qualifying candidates, registering political entities, campaign finance reporting, and our public interfacing database. The Department of State Division of Elections serves as the filing officer for federal, state, multi-county, and special district offices pursuant to Chapter 99 of the Florida statutes. We're also responsible for the statewide mandatory electronic filing system implemented in 2005 for all campaign finance reports. You all are likely experienced users of these systems, having all been candidates. This is the campaign finance database. The current electronic filing system currently operates as a multifaceted system. The oldest portions of the legacy system are almost 30 years old, and the newest portion of the system was implemented over 14 years ago during the 2006 election cycle. So modernization of this system would eliminate the need for hard copy documents that are currently required throughout the election cycle, enhance the filing experience, and also provide more transparency and searchability in candidate and campaign finance activities. Number seven is a modernization of the Florida electronic rulemaking system, Florida Rules. The Department of State Division of Library and Information Services requests $2.5 million in non-recurring authority in general revenue for system maintenance, system upgrade, application improvement, and application upgrade services for the department's electronic rulemaking system. The Department of State's Administrative Code, Register, and Laws section is the filing point for rules promulgated by state regulatory agencies. FloridaRules.org is currently under a maintenance contract where few system modifications are possible due to the outdated technology, but that contract does not cover the necessary rewrites to modernize the system in a manner that aligns with current standards and practices or Florida's cloud-first policy. We have some user challenges that occur due to outdated technologies, and our back end has aged to a point that it's not sustainable and is resulting in unexpected downtime for users and vulnerabilities that cannot be resolved outside of conducting a replacement. These technology updates will enable staff to streamline the processes used, publish ADA compliant and secure documents, and make it easier for the public to use the website. Number eight is a rethatch of the Council House roof at the Mission San Luis. So the Mission is one of the Department of State's four museums here in Tallahassee. And for any of you all who have been there, the Council House is the very large building. Once you enter through the portal, the time portal at the Mission, and look to the right, the Council House is the very large, beautiful structure over there that is circular. And the Council House roof, of course, the entire Council House is constructed in a manner that is consistent with and reflective of the practices of the Apalachee who lived at the Mission during that period in Florida's history. As a consequence, the roof of the Council House was created and constructed using palm fronds, which as a natural material over time degraded and began to rot and began in places to fall from the roof, which created mold, a public safety problem. So at this point, we've had to remove the palm thatch from the roof of the Council House. So it's a very interesting appearance now. It looks very different. It has the support structure still in place, but no fronds. What we propose to do is re-roof the Council House with artificial fronds. What we have learned is though we lose a piece of that authenticity for the actual methods and practices that were used by our native peoples here in Florida, if we use artificial thatch, it is more durable. We have already engaged in this process one time with the roof of the church out at the Mission, and it will be more durable against wind, hurricane and just have a longer lifespan. We anticipate it will have a 30-year lifespan if we replace using the artificial material. Number nine is a request for funding of $1 million in non-recurring general revenue to address staffing needs associated with implementation of Amendment 4. So this is an ongoing staffing need at the Department of State. Once Amendment 4 was passed, it fundamentally changed our process for assessing voter eligibility. It is now necessary to review whether terms of a sentence have been completed, which is a far more complex process than simply checking to see if a person is or is not in the past has been convicted of a felony. So we are seeking these funds in order to maintain a level of OPS staffing so that we have additional employees who can be doing this work to make sure that we are keeping our voter rolls accurate in a timely manner. Number 10 is acquisition of a research vessel. The Department of State Division of Historical Resources requests $164,213 in non-recurring budget authority in the Federal Grants Trust Fund for a new research vessel for the surplus of an aged and obsolete vessel that no longer meets mission requirements. This vessel will be funded by a multi-year Florida Coastal Management Program grant from Florida's Department of Environmental Protection. This program is supported by federal funds provided to DEP by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration to assist in coordination of local, state, and federal agency activities using existing laws to ensure that Florida's coast is valuable to future generations as it is today. So Florida state lands extend 3 miles into the Atlantic and 9 miles into the Gulf, which includes hundreds of historic shipwrecks and submerged prehistoric sites. So we employ both terrestrial and underwater archaeologists at the Department of State, and part of their important work is to review and analyze these sites around Florida. The division does not currently have a reliable vessel capable of supporting its underwater archaeology program needs. And this request would fund a vessel that is of a size that it can safely carry both divers and equipment to these important sites. Of course, we have many examples of these sites, like the Manasota Key offshore site. We have some really interesting things out at Dog Island. I have actually gone out with them to one of these sites and had the personal experience of being marooned in the ocean in one of our current vessels. This request would allow them to modernize and update with an appropriate boat. This concludes the Department of State top 10 items from our LBR. I am happy to take any questions you may have about these or other issues.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Do we have any questions? Representative Cheney, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your presentation. On the $12 million that you're asking for voter registration and election security, are there any reported problems that you're fixing, or is this all just forward-looking prophylactic strategies?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Often when it comes to election security and cybersecurity, we refer to it as a race with no finish line. So it is something that we continue to actively work on. There are things that we are improving, identified challenges that we know need improvement, expansion, hardening, but we also recognize that this is something that we'll just never stop working on. That, you know, as our threat actors evolve and the threat landscape continues to evolve every single year, we are going to have to keep this top of mind and top of priority in order to be prepared to meet those challenges. So it does contemplate both existing things and preparation.
Cheney, for a follow-up.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Regarding voter registration, how are you feeling about that system? Have you identified any problems, or again, is this just improving the system ongoingly?
You recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This will be improving and modernizing the system. The system was developed quite some time ago, and it's necessary to continue to replace hardware, rewrite software, to continue to do that work so that it is something that is prepared to meet the challenges of today. Of course, our voter registration system continues to grow. Our online registration system has now become the most popular method for registration. And our online voter registration system is one of the most important assets that we protect at the Department of State. So this is principally ensuring that that system is modernized and that we can continue to keep it as secure as it has been. To this point, we have not experienced any sort of breach or anything of that nature. It has been secure to here, and we just want to ensure that it continues to be that way.
Ranking Member Hart, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Secretary. Thank you so much for your presentation. I just have a couple of questions. Does the LBR contain any requests for additional funds in order to implement or educate the public about the changes made to the Florida elections law by SB 90?
You're recognized.
So one thing we do, thank you, Mr. Chairman. One thing we do have in our LBR that is significant. It is not directly related to Senate Bill 90, but it is significant as it relates directly to our overall voter outreach efforts. Is we do have an item in our LBR for a mailer. We did a very, very successful mailer in advance of the 2020 general election as the legislature funded us joining ERIC, the Electronic Registration and Information Center, which allows us to compare our voter rolls and databases to those of other member states, and also helped us identify in Florida every single potentially eligible but unregistered voter. So we contacted every one of those voters with a postcard to make sure that they knew if they were eligible, how they could register, and how they could vote in our state. And we have included a similar request this year to do that mailer again. So again, we will reach out to every single person who looks like they may be eligible but unregistered to make sure they have that information. We do not have a line this year for a specific voter outreach campaign, but we do intend to engage in consistent and constant voter outreach and communication to be sure that any Floridian who has questions about when, how, and where to vote, we'll have access to that information. It's simply part of what we do as our ongoing statutory responsibilities. So as anything is changed by Senate Bill 90 or anything that may come this year, we'll work very closely with our supervisors to make sure that they and Florida voters are abreast of any changes.
Ranking Member Hart for a follow-up.
Thank you. So then you don't believe that you need additional funds in order to educate the public, because this is a very robust bill, and I think that people really need to better understand it. So do you not think you need any additional funding for that?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have a very developed and proficient marketing and communications operation in the Department of State at present, and we have met numerous times already with both individuals and groups of supervisors of election to ensure that we have a shared understanding of the effects of Senate Bill 90 and how that might affect the conduct of elections. That's something that we are going to continue to do, and we will partner with them to ensure that any voter who has questions can get them answered. We, of course, do maintain a hotline. So during election time, if voters have questions, they can always reach out to the Department of State to have any of those questions answered. And that's in addition to our electronic resources.
Ranking Member, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Secretary, for indulging me. I know that we've had some litigation, and you've asked for $1 million for litigation. How much has the department spent to date to litigate some of the cases that we've had as it related to Amendment 4?
You recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do not have that sum here with us today, but I do think it's important to note that the department was ultimately successful in defending all of the litigation surrounding Amendment 4. We don't get to choose when plaintiffs bring actions against the Department of State. We are the defendant in those actions, so it is our obligation to defend them accurately and competently, and we did so. And I do believe it's important for you all to note that whatever funds were expended expended. Ultimately, it was determined by the court that the positions taken by the Department of State were in fact correct under the law.
You're recognized.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much for that information. I was just wondering, do you think $1 million is enough? I see that you did request $1 million to meet your staffing needs for the implementation of Amendment 4. Do you think you need any additional funds for that to help you with litigation if it comes about?
You're recognized.
Thank you for the question. The $1 million amount that we've included in the LBR is based upon our estimate and essentially our burn rate on litigation funds so far year to date. So it is always a little bit of an uncertainty for us because we are generally, in some cases, you know, we might be taking a more affirmative position, but generally we are the defendant. So for us, it is always a bit of making our best estimate because we don't always know what's around the corner, what lawsuits may be filed and where we might end up in court. So we've used this dollar amount because it is most reflective of what we're spending so far this year. Although we are currently in some very active litigation surrounding Senate Bill 90, so it is an active litigation year for us.
Representative Harding, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Secretary, for your presentation. I had a question relating to the electronic filing system and the $2 million request there. I'm just trying to get an understanding, so I think some of the terminologies were that it enhances usability, transparency, and searchability. I'm just trying to get some specifics of what those changes are to the current system.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So some of the feedback that we get from users is that it's not a very intuitive system, that it can be difficult for a user or a member of the public to understand what information to input to be able to search the database. I know many of our candidates don't appreciate the need to file some things in paper and would prefer to be electronic. So in part, it would be functionality and usability, and in part, it would be modernizing it so that it is a more reliable, robust system. With respect to specific, how would that look and what would that actual interface page be look like? I don't have that here, but would be happy to bring that specifically to you if we have any sort of mock-ups or ideas of what we would be pursuing. Certainly, we would welcome any input, particularly because you all are users and have used the system. We want to be sure we have stakeholders involved in any decision to modify the system with any suggestions they might have.
Rep. Harding, you have another question in there? Okay. Representative Rommel, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Madam Secretary. Your earlier request for the $13,700,000 for the land acquisition, would that include the building of a new facility or just the land acquisition?
You're recognized.
I'm sorry, sir. Sir, could you repeat the question? I missed one of those words in there.
The acquisition of the $13,700,000 for a land acquisition for a new museum, is that just the land or is that the building also?
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That would be the building as well. That would be the full. So several years ago, we had a study done, and it's from that study that we developed this dollar amount. And the study contemplated constructing a new building out on the grounds at the Mission San Luis that would have both a storage area for the artifacts themselves and then also that public-facing area where the public can come through and tour and see the work of the conservators. So that would be, we would not need to acquire land itself because it would be constructed on the grounds of the Mission San Luis.
Representative LaMarca, you were recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just when you, Madam Secretary, when you answered Representative Rommel's question, it got me thinking you had a study from a few years ago with respect to pricing. Has that been updated to today's construction costs?
You're recognized.
Thank you for the question, and that's a very good question. No, it hasn't. So it's possible, given the cost of materials, supplies, and labor, that dollar amount is low for today's standards. That is, I believe it was 2017 when the study was done.
Do we have any other questions for Secretary Lee while she's here? Ranking member, go ahead. You're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you. I was just wondering, will the Department of State provide any money to local counties as they have a need for that SB 90 to be able to educate on our level back in our counties?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we do administer a very robust grants program for county supervisors of elections to use federal HAVA funds, the Help America Vote Act funds. However, those funds come to us with specific restrictions from the federal government on how they can be used. And the funds that we have access to at present are specifically related to election security. So we hope to provide substantial support to the counties in the coming year using those HAVA dollars, but it would be related specifically because of federal limitations to election security.
Any other questions? Thank you so much for being here today. And members, I know I say this at every meeting when we have an agency here. If you want to dive deeper into some of these, what they're doing, or you have more questions, I know that they'll be glad to meet with you in your office to get further information. Secretary Lee, thank you so much for being here. Next up, we're going to have Secretary Dane Eagle with Department of Economic Opportunity. Secretary Eagle, you look much more well-rested than the last time you were here last year. The baby must be sleeping well through the night. You're recognized, sir.
A little bit. It's not because of the work, but certainly the baby's sleeping better. But Chairman, thank you for the opportunity. Vice Chair Persons Mullica, nice to hear that. Great job beating out former Vice Chair Rommel, but good to see Southwest Florida still represented. And Ranking Member Hart and members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity. And Chairman, I love the new style. It fits you well. I want to start by thanking all of you, the legislature in its entirety, for answering our call last year for modernization efforts. You all allocated nearly $100 million to modernize the system over 2 years, as well as operational costs and increased staffing opportunities. That's ongoing now. We've been hard at work all summer long on providing an update to the Senate on Monday and Chair Hooper's committee, so look forward to talking about that. And of course, today we're here to talk about our needs for this year, so I'll dive right into it. I want to start by giving a high-level overview of the Department of Economic Opportunity. We're still a relatively young agency created in 2011, and a lot of people ask, what exactly do you do? We're divided into three major outward programmatic-facing divisions. That's Division of Community Development. We work very closely with our cities and counties around the states to assess needs, issue grants, whether that's through the Governor's Job Growth Grant Fund, it's allocated by the legislature, or disaster recovery funds is allocated by HUD at the federal level. We also have the Office of Broadband within that division. Division of Strategic Business Development, there we work very closely with Enterprise Florida and our other partners to attract new businesses to Florida while also offering opportunities to existing businesses within Florida to continue to grow and thrive. Then we have the Division of Workforce Services, where we have our Wiser shop, which releases the monthly unemployment numbers. We have one-stop and program support. We work closely with Career Source and local workforce development boards. And then, of course, re-employment assistance. So unemployment, of course, has been a big topic. You can see that is one of three bureaus within one of three major divisions. We are quite a big agency with over 2,000 employees and a budget of over $1 billion. Our partners are here today. I don't think the organizations need any introduction, but I do want to introduce the agency heads, as they do a great job working with their teams to support the people of Florida. We have Career Source Florida, led by Michelle Denard. We have Enterprise Florida, led by Jamal Sowell, who is here with us today. This is Jamal's last week, so Chairman, if you have time at the end, I encourage you to invite him up and ask him some tough questions. But he is off to serve the state and the country further in the Navy Reserve, so we thank him for his continued service. We have with us Dana Young, former majority leader in the Florida House, leading Visit Florida. We have Space Florida is led by Frank DiBello. He's represented by Lindsay Pierce today. The Florida Sports Foundation, led by Angela Suggs. And last and certainly not least, the Florida Housing and Finance Corporation, led by Trey Price, who is here with us today. And I thank all of them for their continued work in supporting the governor and the legislature and all we do to serve the people of Florida. So the department has full-time positions of over 1,509 full-time FTEs, and 711 OPS employees, and that's comprised of over 500 serving directly in re-employment assistance. And thanks to the increased allotment for OPS employees last year to help serve the need of Floridians as we work on backlogs. Total appropriations for 2021-2022 was just over $1.5 billion. That's a base operation of $691 million. Fun fact there, 90% of that base operation is federally funded, 10% comes from state funds. The non-recurring appropriations last year of nearly $412 million, And much of that was through our partners, Florida Housing and Finance Corporation, Visit Florida, Economic Development Toolkit, which is used with Enterprise Florida, and then our reemployment assistance needs for reemployment modernization. Then we had nearly $440 million for fiscal recovery, and that was used for payments for first responders, which was a top priority of the governor. We were able to go around with him earlier this summer to thank our first responders with $1,000 stipend checks for their work during the COVID pandemic, Connect Modernization, and the Florida Job Growth Grant Fund, as well as additional support for Visit Florida. Our ask this year is nearly $500 million less. So we thank you for your work last year. We were asking for one additional FTE up to 1,510. That would be to support the Office of Broadband. And that total ask, some of the highlights, we're looking for a salary rate for veterans employment at the tune of $574,000. That is to be competitive in hiring veterans who in turn help other veterans across our state find employment. My team is actually currently in Orlando at the Veterans Workforce Summit, where they're helping to train others and learn more about how we can support our veterans as they return to the civilian workforce. In community development, we're asking for one FTE and $320,000 for the Office of Broadband. That's for salary and salary support services, as well as to continue with our mapping project, which is ongoing now and will be submitted to the legislature soon. Statewide Rural Infrastructure Grant, that is a $1.6 million ask. We asked for that annually. It was inadvertently left out of the budget last year, but that is a great opportunity to help some of our rural communities with infrastructure needs. $239,000 for OPS positions and to support economic self-sufficiency. That's to help us carry out some of our CARES Act projects, and we don't need FTE because that will be temporary as we move forward. In economic development, we're asking for $1.6 million in defense infrastructure grant. That is typically recurring. It has not been recurring, and we are asking if we can make that recurring again to support our military installations across the state. $33 million for the Economic Development Toolkit. Now, that is to support our incentive programs, which are on the back end, whether it's through Enterprise Florida and the work that we do there after we make a commitment, that is paid in the back end for the commitments that we've already made. And $25 million for the Florida Job Growth Grant Fund, top priority of the governor's. I've actually been on the road within the last 2 days making announcements, and we have more announcements this week. Has been very successful. And then last on that list, Sush Japan in 2022. This is very exciting. The Southeast U.S. Japan Conference is hosted between the Southeast United States, the states, as well as Japan. We host them every 14 years, give or take. Last time we hosted was in 2006, before that was 92, before that was 78. We were set to host them in 2020, I believe, but COVID has pushed that back. So in 2022, we will be hosting 700, 800 delegates from the Southeastern United States as well as Japan. For our partners, we are asking for about $210 million for Florida Housing Finance Corporation. That's for affordable housing, as well as the SHIP program. $50 million for Visit Florida's ongoing efforts, $6 million for Space Florida, and $500,000 for the Florida Sports Grants. That is my presentation. Happy to answer any questions, Chairman.
Thank you very much, and also thank you for the compliment on my hair, or my not hair, I should probably say. Only a good politician can make somebody feel about balding much sooner than they wanted to, so you still got it. But thank you for being here today. Do we have any questions for Secretary Eagle? Ranking Member Hart, you're recognized for a question.
Good morning, Mr. Secretary. Thank you for all of your assistance. I must have sent thousands of letters to you, and oh, that's who I was sending them to. Well, thank you so much for
does a wonderful job helping our legislative affairs department.
Thank you so much in ensuring that the people got timely responses back from you, and I greatly appreciate it. I just wanted to know, are we still continuing to work on some backlogs? Do you have any idea what we have out there?
Yes, ma'am. So to give, and this is part of the big update I'll be giving Monday, but roughly since the pandemic started, and we marked that as March 15, 2020, my team has resolved 30 million adjudication issues. That's a significant number. And we had maybe 100,000, 200,000 adjudication issues come in every single week. So that's just an example, and unfortunately, why the need for you to keep sending us emails. And we are working through that. Fortunately, unfortunately, depending on where you see it, federal benefits did end, and that has allowed us to come up for air and finally look at the backlog as it stands and work that down. Now, we had 30 million that we've solved. Since July of this year, we have had 2 million additional come in. We've also worked 2 million since July of this year. So there is roughly about 3.5 million adjudication issues that we have left to do. Now, with the federal benefits ending, I'm confident we can get through those. But as I just explained, 200 million coming in at the same time we worked 200 million in the past, it was just swimming against a very high tide. But we're getting there. And thank you for the opportunity to hire more people to help us do that.
You're quite welcome. I have another question as it relates to our software, our update that you all did. People are still getting locked out and unable to reach anybody, a person. Do we have hotlines or something that they might be able to call to be able to really get through? Because I can get through.
Right.
And I need the constituents to be able to do the same thing.
Well, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry. One thing we did not ask for last year is continued funds for the call centers. The call centers were a symptom of the problem, which was the Connect system and the need to hire more staff behind the scenes to work on those bigger issues. Call centers cost us about $10 million a month and well over $100 million throughout the pandemic. So we decided to part ways and just work on the backlog. So that is part of that issue there. Part of the modernization efforts, we have created the RA Help Center. If you go to floridajobs.org/RA Help Center, there is a automated AI-supported ability to solve some problems on your own. We are working on that. It's a continued work in progress, but that is the best way if anyone is seeking problems. First, I encourage anyone to go in their Connect system. Many of the problems, obviously, they got to be able to get in, and I'll get to that next, but if you can go in, it should be able to be self-addressed there. But then if you go to the Help Center, either you can get an answer or you can basically leave a message and we can get back to that message. Now, it's not overnight. I mentioned the backlogs, but we do get to it and we do address it. As far as locked accounts go, we had significant fraud across the nation, and Florida was no secret to it. Now, we had it. We've been very good at stopping that. We were able to detect when and how it happened. 70% of all claims from January of this year until September, when the federal benefits ended, 70% of attempted claims were fraudulent. Incredible number. We are successful in stopping and identifying 90% of that. Some does get in. And when it does get in, then we stop it. And that requires us locking someone's account. And that's to save them from their benefits getting stolen and their identity from being further breached. So that was difficult, but we had to make that decision to help them by locking their account. Good news is we did put up two-factor authentication as well as identity checks on the front end. That has been largely successful. Most accounts that have been locked have been unlocked, and they've been able to get in. Now, there's a small percentage that have had challenges with that new system, and we're working on communication and making sure that everybody gets in, but that's part of the growing pains of adopting a new process. But we are moving forward on that, and we should be seeing those locked accounts going away.
Okay.
Ranking Member Hart, you have a follow-up?
I have just one more question.
You recognize.
As it relates to to housing, on page 66 and 68 on the LBR, I'm not sure if Florida Housing Finance is asking for requesting $146 million or $152 million. So could you tell me which one?
You recognize.
Thank you, Chairman. Can I bring up Trey to help answer that? Great.
Mr. Price, you recognize, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Trey Price, Executive Director at Florida Housing. Our legislative budget request was submitted to the department some time ago, and I believe that was actually a different amount than what was included. And so the total amount, we typically ask for what the balance of the trust funds as the folks who oversee those trust funds. And I believe those were different amounts. And so I can't answer, you know, to what the department has requested, but we have requested the entire amount of the trust funds.
Ranking Member Hart, you have a question?
And do we know what that dollar amount is? Is it the one of these amounts?
You recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The total amount that is in the trust funds that is estimated currently is $355 million, approximately.
And you're asking for the $355 million?
We submitted that request to the department.
Ranking Member, you have any other questions? Thank you very much. Do we have any other questions for Secretary
Chair,
Eagle?
If you don't mind.
Oh, yes, you recognize,
further,
sir.
Further clarity on that, of course, the Florida Housing and Finance Corporation is doing a great job serving their mission. With the legislative action last year, it was determined that 50% of those funds would go to their continued mission, which is the $209 million that we asked for. And Ranking Member Hart, we can get you further clarity on that discrepancy that you have asked about.
Any other questions? Representative Walmarker, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And leader is a pretty good title, but secretary I think is better. Mr. Secretary, with respect to the economic development piece, can you, and you talked a little bit about it, but can you dig in just a little bit more on the economic development toolkit and how that process works and what it goes towards?
You recognize.
Thank you, Chairman. And if Secretary Saul wants to help with it as well, he's welcome as if you so choose. We have, whether it's the Quick Action Closing Fund, which has been sunsetted, but yet we still have some commitments on that, or the Qualified Target Industry, which I know, Chairman, you have worked, or Vice Chairman or Representative Lamarca, you've worked on in the past. We have commitments there through the CITC or the HIPPE programs. These are commitments that we have made with entities, organizations, businesses across Florida. We sign those contracts with them. As long as they meet their end of the bargain, whether it's the capital investment that they make in our state or the amount of jobs that they've created, as long as they hold up their end of it, then we give them a tax credit on the back end. And so that $33 million is representative of what we owe to businesses based on our promises to them for the upcoming fiscal year.
Any other questions? Secretary Eagle, thank you for being here. I've missed you the last couple of years, being your seatmate for 2 years in the House. You've done a great job where you are now, but you're always a great friend. I made sure that you had plenty of snacks and everything when you were on the House floor with me, but it was always a good time sitting next to you. I do miss you, but thank you for what you're doing now. We really appreciate all the hard work you're doing and all the other agencies under your leadership. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. To the rest of the members, if you're looking for snacks, you don't want to go to the back, just go to Chair Williamson's seat. He's got them. Thank you, sir.
All right, the last but certainly not least, we have Mark Mahoney with he's a director of finance and administration for the Division of Emergency Management. And did I get that last name right? I hope
yes.
So.
Yeah, definitely.
Very good.
Mahoney.
Mr. Mahoney, you are recognized, sir.
Just trying to get our presentation up, so give us a moment. There, I don't see DMs. Oh, that little technical assistance. DM. All right, thank you. Good morning, and thank you for having me here today, Chair Williamson, Vice Chair Persons Malika, and Ranking Member Hart. Anyway, my name is Mark Mahoney, and I serve as the Division Director of Finance and Administration. I just would like to tell you that Director Guthrie is actually making county EOC visits today, and he's out, you know, just taking a look, seeing what's going on as we continue to work towards preparedness types of things. Anyway, he definitely apologizes for not being here, so he sent me instead. Fortunate for you, unfortunate for me, but I'm here. But anyway, before we get going, I'd like to kind of go over DEM. You know, how does DEM work? How does DEM function? And make sure I can do this the right way. So before I dive into our LBR, I wanted to just kind of discuss DEM structure, because DEM can be a mystery. You know, what happens at DEM? We know they show up for hurricanes, we know they do things, but what is DEM? What do they do? And we're actually constructed of four distinct bureaus: mitigation, preparedness, response, and recovery. All four of these bureaus are supported by the division's IT bureau, the general counsel's office, obviously finance and administration, as well as our human services unit. So it's really an umbrella of response and preparedness and fiscal recovery kinds of functions all wrapped around response. It's kind of how we function. This overview will break down the differences between the division's blue sky as well as the division's gray sky operations. To put it simply, blue sky is the division's day-to-day operations. And a lot of times, you know, during COVID and during some of the tropical depressions, there was a time where the division was actually activated for 500 days. 500 days activated. And so the blue sky type of operations, those are the day-to-day. That's the management. That's the closing out of prior grants. That is those types of activities, hardening, managing the ongoing programs, et cetera. The gray sky refers to us being activated, us being deployed, us being front and center. As you can imagine, these responsibilities differ greatly. I want to start with our Mitigation Bureau. Our Mitigation Bureau administers the federal, our federal and one state-funded mitigation grant programs. The Bureau serves as the state coordinating agency for the National Flood Insurance Program, maintains a state hazard mitigation plan, and provides technical assistance, reviews, and approves all 67 county local mitigation strategies as required by FEMA. Our Preparedness Bureau, they work on preparing for the state's all hazards planning programs. This ensures that the state emergency response team is prepared for prompt and efficient response. This bureau also coordinates the delivery of training courses for our counties and first responders. Similar to our Mitigation Bureau, the Preparedness Bureau manages six grant programs. These federal grants empower local communities to prepare for potential emergencies related to natural disasters, acts of terrorism, and federal grants around border security. After preparedness, we have our Response Bureau. The Response Bureau is broken down into three sections: logistics, infrastructure, technology, technological hazards. This bureau also monitors potential incidents statewide that may require a state response through the State Watch Office. The State Watch Office maintains constant communication with all 67 county emergency officials and is staffed 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And lastly, we have our Recovery Bureau. The Recovery Bureau works to maximize disaster assistance to eligible public entities, individuals, and families through federal disaster assistance programs. Most notably, our Recovery Bureau recently crossed the $6 billion mark for disaster recovery funding. A small division, but a lot of money flows through it, especially lately because we've just had a lot of events. In less than 3 years, the Bureau has reimbursed more than $6 billion to counties statewide. That's money going directly back into state agencies and your districts to support disaster recovery and build more resilient communities. I also want to take a minute to provide additional information on the types of disaster the division responds to. This slide outlines the declared and non-declared disasters the division has responded to in recent years. Often people associate our divisions with hurricanes, and that's obvious. We're Florida. We get a lot of those every year. Tropical systems, tropical depressions, a couple tornadoes, wildfires, you name it, we get it. But in the short time that I've been finance director, which has actually only been a little over 3 months, and there's been three events. And so it was a target-rich environment as soon as I started. During that time, I've seen them respond to hurricanes, tropical storms, manage prior year tornadoes, wildfires that occurred in the state. Obviously, recently, the Surfside building complex, where over 90 people died. Awful event. And currently, we are the front of the COVID-19 response effort, in partnership with the Department of Health, just trying to manage what is going on with respect to the pandemic. That's all going on now. And I've also witnessed the division manage statewide mutual aid agreements and work closely with local and federal assets. This ensures any resource shortfalls are addressed in a timely, efficient, and coordinated manner. Additionally, due to the growing number of hazards our state faces, the state emergency response team has added two additional emergency support functions. These additional emergency support functions, otherwise known as ESFs, ESF 19 and ESF 20. ESF 19 deals with fuels. ESF 20 deals with cybersecurity. As you can see, the division is responding to more and more events every year and more different types of threats every year. Despite our coordinated responses to these disasters, many which you witnessed firsthand, we believe we can do better for our state and its residents. In that, I want to just give you a brief overview of our base budget. So we are a small division in comparison to some of the state agencies. $76 billion, or 97% of our money, is federal. All right, $2.23 million is basically all we have in our base budget that is general revenue. Our FTE OPS structure, I'm pointing this out, is because it's kind of becoming a problem for the division, and we're addressing it in our LBR ask. But we have 175 FTEs, but we use 166 OPS on a full-time basis and half a year, not temporary, years, some 14 years plus. And so one of the first things I looked at when I looked at their budget structure was, wow, some of this has got to get corrected. I mean, if we've got OPS positions basically working that long, but dedicated to the division's response for that long, we need them to become FTEs. And then when you look at the fact that we only have about 2.8% of general revenue is our only flexible money. You know, all of the trust fund money is very specific. So if you have to respond to a different need out of operations, we're rather limited. You know, so, you know, the federal skin in this game is actually large in proportion to the state investment. And that goes without saying, because most of the DHS grants, the Department of Homeland Security grants and the FEMA grants, they're 100% FFP. On the disaster side, they're 75-25 FFP, but that comes through a different realm of appropriations, and it's appropriated through emergency order. But core operations to maintain readiness is very restricted in structure. I want to kind of go over our goals. So before I get into our LBR, we kind of screen the LBR ask, you know, because when you say, hey, okay, we're preparing for the LBR, it's like, hey, I need this. We wanted to make sure that it was either going to improve processes, it was going to engage technology to improve those processes, and we have here to empower local governments, but we really want to actually build that relationship with local governments. We see this as more of a team event, a joint response, a cooperative response, not necessarily the division passing down edicts. We work together to come up with the best response solution for the jurisdictions affected by the event. And in doing so, we want to prepare this whole group to respond to emergencies, recover from them, and mitigate against their impacts. In doing so, we want to modernize our systems and business processes. This basically also means what I would refer to as a front-to-end business solution. How do we provide a gateway for everybody that does business with the division to move money fast, to move money quick, to get them paid, to get it claimed, to get the federal funds drawn down, and shorten that window from weeks and months and years in some cases to days and weeks and maybe months. You know, and from a time value of money for all my finance people in the room, that's a big deal. You know, so the GR investment, a lot of these disasters sits there for a while, and sometimes you're going, hey, when is that going to close out? And we are addressing that in our LBR. As you also recall, last year, Senate Bill 2006 made needed changes and updates to the divisions and how we operate. I first want to stop and just pause and thank you for that bill. The needed changes in your hard work and your vision on that legislation really, really helped emphasize what we do, how we do it, and the types of threats that are face Floridians. Through the LBR of this year, we want to continue carrying the vision of Senate Bill 2006 and ultimately build sustainability and capacity. So I want to kind of go over the overview of our request a little bit. So the overview of our request, we're basically asking for $139 million in general revenue, $1 billion in trust fund authority. I want to say that again, $1 billion in trust fund authority. That $1 billion is open disasters, 100% FEMA money that we're continuing to work to close out. So in large part, we are still building a heavy footprint on the entire federal side. The $139 million in general revenue, it is basically to address staffing, response times, investments in technology, as well as structural hardened facility investment in warehouses to be strategically placed throughout the state. But it's to deal with things that we've identified as gaps, we've identified as business process needs, we identified as things that inhibited our response efforts. And some of that came forward in Inspector General audits that were around staffing, procurement, contracts, as well as business processes. But in the next three slides, we're going to go into a little bit more detail about that and how those all support the long-term investment into FDEM response efforts to events that happen in Florida. First, I want to talk about positions, and technology investments. This is investments in the operational aspect of the division. And so this is about resiliency, capacity, and sustainability. Basically, you'll see here, we're asking for 41 FTE. We want to convert 35 of those 166 OPS that basically serve as FTE to FTE, and that's year one of a three-year plan to actually convert all 166 full-time equivalent OPS. The state general revenue is $18.8 million that we're asking for, and a little bit of recurring trust fund authority in the OPS conversion that we knew that supported those OPS, so we have a little bit of a grant footprint there. But in all, that $18 million, half of it is going towards people, and half of it is going towards technology. And so in that, you know, on the technologies, on the personnel side, we want to build our team and build our capacity. We want to enhance our team's readiness to respond, and we want to address competitive needs with local and federal governments and the private sector. I kind of want to talk about technology, too, because half of that ask involves technology. Part of it is to digitalize paper records, a cloud-based solution to streamline the submission of elevation certificates from counties, to maintain software license, and to basically develop our front-end grant, basically business process solution. I want to be clear about that just a little bit. We're talking about being able to do business with counties. We're talking about being able to do business with municipalities. We're talking about being able to do business with trucking companies. We're talking about being able to do business with nonprofits. We do business with everyone. We also want to take a more active role of coordinating the grant responses that occur related to FEMA for our state agencies. Right now, they're on their own. They go through their PDMGs, which are the FEMA equivalents of going through their grants, and we want that in-house. We want that in-house. We think we can move the money faster. We have an ongoing relationship with those FEMA counterparts, and just quite frankly, with the system and the expertise that we have within the division, plus this investment, we just feel like we can do it better. And one of the staffing examples, I just want to take a moment to talk about that. In the field of emergency and management, the emergency management is a very competitive area. It is used, we are the ones, the 1% that responds when the 99% can't. We are a very specialized, very competitive industry in that each employee in a division undergoes several hours of federal and state training to prepare to respond and to administer our grant programs, much of which revolves around FEMA. Many of the grants that I mentioned beforehand require 40-plus hours of training in order to administer the programs. Due to the extensive training and the standardization of emergency management as a whole, many employees do receive opportunities from the federal and local governments and private sector competitors. It's just a fact. It's a reality of our business, period. For context, since January 2020, the division has lost more than 130 employees to that competition. We just can't pay that way. We just can't. And that is nearly half the total number of employees the division has and is a direct reflection of the competitive nature of our industry. The part of our LBR request will allow us to address pay consistency and equivalent positions in the federal government and private sector. This will allow the division to recruit and retain trained emergency managers. Essentially, we want the best of the best, and we want to keep them. Now I want to move on to what we have in our LBR with respect to preparedness and response. In our preparedness and response, is $120 million. $110 million is basically for three new warehouses to maintain current warehouses, to provide 12 FTE support for those warehouses. And by the way, those warehouses, when built, would be in strategic areas of the state. Right now, we're in Orlando. You know, we've got a lot of different areas of the state to reach. We kind of want them in places where we can find some less expensive ground. Basically build them and get a little bit closer to the south, get a little closer to the panhandle, et cetera. But also included that is some part of that ask is we're asking for some vehicles, and we're talking about semis. We're talking about semis that can move PPE. We're talking about semis that can move respirators, the housing of mobile hospitals. So the warehouses won't just have food and water, but we need the capacity to store both food and water as well as these other assets. But that is part of this ask, and part of how we feel, you know, 2006 being able to maintain that PPE, and part of that investment is in, into more PPE, but that is what's going on in that $120 million. The division currently maintains one long-term warehouse in Orlando. The warehouse primary function is to house immediate food and water for the initial 72 to 96 hours after the onset of a disaster, until additional resources from the private sector or federal government become available. In other words, we want to be ready first. We have to be ready first, because most otherwise everything else is shut down. Last year, Senate Bill 2006 required that the division maintain a stock of personal protective equipment, reducing the current supply of food and water to make room for the PPE storage requirements, places the division at a high risk of being unable to provide food and water to shelters, points of distributions, and humanitarian feeding partners in the aftermath of a disaster. In order to meet the requirements of Senate Bill 2006, the division is requesting funding for three additional warehouses, which I mentioned earlier. This will allow the state to maintain its capacity to provide food and water and store the different types of PPE needed for biological incidents, wildfires, floods, debris management, and medical-related PPE, such as respirators and masks, etc. The warehouse is currently only operated by two employees. Neither of these individuals possess the required licenses to transport state products during a no-notice or non-declared disaster, such as the Broward County water main incident. And this is one of the reasons that just really gave genesis to this issue, and I want to go over it a little bit. So back in July 17th, 2019, Broward County reported a water main break to the division and requested bottled water for their residents until their water main vendor would be able to provide support. Under an executive order, if there was one, typically the division would be able to mobilize resources from the Orlando warehouse immediately. Due to the additional staffing from the Florida National Guard, we would have been able to have used that EO to mobilize other resources. However, this was a non-declared disaster, meaning the two warehouse employees were entirely responsible for mobilizing those resources. The support Broward County ultimately took longer than anticipated. So we did get the support, it just took a while. The division was required to coordinate with vendors and nonprofit organizations to move our own resources from the warehouse to the area of impact. In the end, the division supplied more than 10 truckloads of water to the county, although it took twice as long as it would have with necessary staffing. If the state needs to move state commodities, currently we are required to request funding and then source a vendor to provide the transportation. This creates considerable delays in our ability to support the residents of Florida with assets already owned by the state. By placing these warehouses in strategic areas and ensuring they are ready to meet our needs with adequate staff, we are enabling ourselves to become self-sufficient during disaster responses, but also non-disaster responses. Lastly, of that $120 million, $10 million of that is an investment in our urban search and rescue teams, and we've got to know them well during Surfside. So part of our general revenue, we're asking for $10 million for that group, and that's to support the state's eight urban search and rescue teams. The division relies heavily on these teams during a disaster. We also all understand the risks our first responders endure every day to keep Floridians safe. They are often the first to respond and the last to leave. For instance, all eight teams responded to Surfside building collapse simultaneously and then went on to continue serving their communities after they completed their deployment. Urban search and rescue teams are locally staffed but deploy under state emergency response team. The division is proud to support our USAR teams by covering expenses while deployed. The teams are typically sustained under the Homeland Security grant programs, but right now the funding level for that program is only at $9 million. Surfside, we're going to spend well over $40 to $50 million on USAR teams, easily. To continue supporting our first responders, the division is requesting funding grants to be used to maintain service and replace USAR equipment, address USAR vehicle needs, provide training for specialized positions, and conduct an annual full-scale exercises. So this was why we kind of grouped these issues, as you can see. One is operations, how to best support the division. One is how to best invest in response capacity in light of Senate Bill 2006, which thank you very much for that legislation. And then lastly, the last part of our ask, which is all trust fund. We're asking for over $1 billion to basically close out open disasters that are currently still being managed by the division in Blue Sky. So a lot of these disasters are closed, but the work doesn't stop. The work continues. The regulations don't stop. The regulations continue to change. The training doesn't stop. The training continues. So as we work through this, one of the things we really have realized is a lot of the hazard mitigation funding grants are generated by federal formulas that are in federal law. And if we can shorten that window of expenditure recognition to get those expenditures recognized in the time frames used by Congress to set those levels, the state would absolutely be eligible for a lot more in federal money. And we want to re-engineer these business processes to actually make that happen. And what we mean there, and we'll just give you a little bit of an example. In Hurricane Michael, we were really better prepared there. A smaller area with respect to counties impacted, but Michael was awful. Michael was absolutely awful. And so after Hurricane Michael, due to the bigger role the division played through expanding critical relief funding, we secured a total of $417 million in those hazard mitigation funds. Well, just compared that to Irma. Irma affected the entire state for the most part. And we pretty much got the same level of funding because we just were slow in getting the claims in. So by the time the federal government said, hey, let's take our expenditure snapshot, we still had 50% of the claim in the baffles that we couldn't count. And, you know, and just me being a finance guy, I don't like that, right? And also, we rely on trucking companies. We rely on staffing contracts. COVID has really exposed how underprepared we still responded. But I think all of you know that we were really slow in getting bills paid because the system literally just got overwhelmed. You know, we went from processing thousands of transactions to tens of thousands of transactions. I've been there 3 months. One of the things that we're already working on automating is how we move the bill paying process with our Department of Financial Services partners. And what we did there was we developed a batch process and a pre and a post audit process. In less than 3 weeks, we processed over 30% of our volume and over $1 billion in payments. All right, and so that is just bringing innovation to the table, but our front end and our business solution in the middle is also paramount in that whole discussion, and we know it. This LBR reflects it, and we really feel like we can change the model to really make the Division of Emergency Management in Florida the best in the nation. That's where we want to be. So that concludes our LBR presentation. I want to thank you for allowing me to present today. I know it was a lot of information, but we wanted to be able to provide a comprehensive overview of what we do, why we ask for what we ask for, how it correlates to what our mission is, and how our investment in technology and staffing isn't just about, hey, is this government? No, it's response. And the Florida legislature has been an incredible partner in securing funding in the past, ensuring our communities have all the resources that they need to recover. And right now, we're prepared to answer any questions you have or provide any additional information. If I can't answer it today, we will definitely get it back to you. So anyway, Chair, thank you very much. And I'm ready to answer questions.
Mr. Mahoney, thank you for your very thorough presentation. We appreciate you being here. Do we have any questions? Representative Cheney, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that presentation. Appreciate that you've joined the agency. Sounds like you're doing some good work. I especially like the innovations that you're doing to give us access to more federal dollars. I'm from District 69, which is predominantly a coastal district. And so this flood rate 2.0 is a huge concern.
Yes, it is.
Can you speak to what your agency is doing to be engaged in that process and maybe
No,
that?
But what I'd like to do is set up some time with you maybe to really kind of go over that with the people that need to be in that conversation. I would like that to be the director and folks from our recovery bureau. What I can tell you is those baselines were just released. We're still wrapping our arms around what that all means, how that translates into insurance impacts and all those things, but I would be happy to set that up. I am just not the guy to have that conversation with.
Okay.
Not
thank
by
you.
Myself.
I welcome that. Thank you. Thank okay. you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Ranking Member Hart, you're recognized for a question.
Good morning. Hey. Thank you so much for the information. I was just wondering, how many millions of dollars have we spent on COVID, and why didn't it show on your pie chart? Because I know we've eaten up some of your money.
Oh, yeah, well, yes, sorry. Sorry about that. I got a whole recognized thing. Hey, yes, and actually the only reason is it's part of that $1 billion, but actually with respect to COVID, we're going to spend somewhere around $2 to $3 billion. That is actually in special non-recurring appropriations that happen through executive order. And so while you don't see it in our base budget, it is absolutely part of the spend. And so when I brought up the recovery part where I said that we've spent $6 billion, okay, COVID is a big piece of that $6 billion, right? And great question. Thank you for asking it. And that's the mystery of the DEM budget. I show you our base, but that hardly translates into what we spend because most of what we spend is through disaster.
Okay. Ranking Member Hart for a follow-up.
Yes, sir. I also want to thank you all for all of the assistance that you gave Hillsborough County and your response each time we ask for something and getting it, especially during the height of the pandemic. But thank you for that. I was just wondering, how many FTEs and OPS employee positions are you seeking through the funding request that's in your LBR for 2022?
Sure.
You're recognized.
Thank you. Sorry. I'll slow down. You're quick, though. So we're actually asking for a total of 41 FTEs for operations. Those are new FTEs, and those are to fill critical gaps in policy development, wrapping around procurement and response, and railing down some of the things that we really need to do to get our front end ready to pay faster, as well as to invest in response and recovery and other aspects of our operations, including legal. The OPS conversion, that is literally converting 35 OPS at this stage. They'll become 35 new FTE, but that will still be just a net position gain of zero because pretty much they function like FTE. And then we're asking for 12 FTEs to just support those three warehouses. Now, I will tell you, 12 FTEs, you're probably going, oh, my gosh, FTEs to handle three warehouses. Or for three warehouses, the sizes that we're talking about, Amazon employs, like, twice that, right? And so there's $10 million in there for recurring management of the facilities and stuff like that, and the 12 FTEs are there just to move assets, keep the lights on, do those types of things. But we also have $10 million in there that's part of maintaining the current lease. But once we get the new facilities, if we so do get those facilities, we would use those dollars to basically maintain the equipment, maintain those facilities going forward.
Do you know what that? I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
No, go right ahead.
Do you know what that dollar amount looks like
For the FTEs?
Yes.
Yeah, I do. So for the FTEs on the 41, the total is a little over $4
million. Okay, so it is a part of what?
Yes, it is all
one of those numbers.
Yes, the numbers, the FTE ask is part of these numbers, yes.
I just have one final question.
You're recognized, ranking member.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How are you all deciding whether to build new warehouses or to purchase one that's already up?
Great question. So that issue is we will do a business case assessment of that. So the dollars we're actually asking for would either be to harden or retrofit an existing facility or to build one from scratch. So to add a little more clarity, we're in the process of analyzing that with the Department of Management Services. We're already aggressively looking at it. I do know one thing that's weighing into this is obviously, and it came up in an earlier presentation, obviously things cost more to build right now. And so we're looking for real estate that isn't necessarily right off an interstate, but has got a great connecting road and is a road that wouldn't be underwater during a hurricane. And so, right, so there's a lot of strategic thinking that goes on to that business process, you know, in terms of both the cost-benefit analysis as well as the assessment and the strategies wrapped around and figuring out where's the best place to put this and why. But we are already aggressively working with the Department of Management Services to help us do that.
Okay, I said one. I'm sorry, Mr.
You're Chairman. Recognized.
I just wanted to know, for the fiscal 22-23, what level of funding is needed for the division to maintain sufficient budget authority to manage federal funds awarded for disaster recovery programs?
Right.
You recognize.
Yes, thank you. Sorry. Quick, Johnny on the spot. So right now, we're estimating that to be about $1 billion. That is in this last ask. And so that represents what we right now have as a current inventory of disasters. But obviously, we're not done with COVID, right? And we're not done with hurricanes. We're not done with wildfires. And so as events hop up, obviously, we will be getting more budget authority. $1 billion is low. Most likely by the end of the year through executive order, we'll be more into the $2 to $3 billion range.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Good.
Final.
Okay.
Is this the same funding needed to fulfill your state match requirements for certain federal awards?
This is contemplating that we won't need it for the disasters that we're talking about. But right now, there is a little bit of a technical analysis going on with us and the Office of Policy and Budget to look at the general revenue that's already been invested in division in prior disasters. But a lot of the ways we make matches with other types of claims that are happening at the community level that we count as local match. So that really is a disaster by disaster determination. Right now, we do not foresee any state need there.
Thank you so much. I greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I know we have a couple more members that have questions, and we have 10 minutes, so I don't want to cut too much in that time. But off of something that Ranking Member Hart talked about, the storage facilities and the warehouse spacing that you've asked for, and you said that an assessment is going on. Generally, like when I'm in business, I'm going to assess something before I go and ask for something. How did you come up with without having an assessment, how did you know what to come up with to ask us?
Well, we worked with the Department of Management Services and the Office of Policy and Budget to put around that original estimate. So that wasn't just spitballed. There was an evaluation done with some preliminary numbers, square footage, et cetera, where we arrived at the $75 million being sufficient for three facilities.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for that question.
Representative Harding, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair. Wasn't going to mention this, but as we're talking about the warehouses, you talked about locations that are not near an interstate but centrally located. Levy County is right on US 19 and would be a great location.
Sweet.
No, I had a question relating to rural Florida. So I represent a large piece of rural Florida, including a coastal town in Levy County. And one of the issues we're facing, and if my office hasn't reached out to yours, we are, as we're trying to be a resource for our counties, is we have an issue specific relating to shelters and emergency operations centers. So right now our schools are obviously the majority of our shelters, but specific to special needs, if a special needs shelter is open in a school, then that school can be prevented from reopening because of the living conditions or some other issues that revolve around that. So are there specific resources within your department, within whether it's related houses and the funding for those, and if they're centrally located in an area that could benefit, then they could double as maybe have some type of shelter area, mm-hmm. or some other outside of the box thinking on how we can help? Because obviously the county level doesn't have the funds in a rural county that has a majority of folks under the poverty level. So the funding concern, and I'm just looking to see, is there a path within the funds that you already have that could potentially be a resource in that arena?
Nice.
Yes, and what I would like to do is set up a separate meeting with you on that, because the answer is plausibly yes, but we need to get some more specifics.
Thank you.
Yeah, but we would be happy to meet with you on it.
Representative LaMarca, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just following up on Representative Cheney's good question about National Flood Program, your response was that you would put a group of people together and meet with her directly. I represent purely a coastal region as well. So if there's a way to get that information back to all of us, that would be helpful.
Yeah, we can do that. Yes, we definitely will. We'll share it with everybody. And by the way, if you want to set something up special on that, yeah, absolutely. We'll do whatever you ask us to do.
Thank you.
Do we have any other questions for Mr. Mahoney? All right, we appreciate you being here. Thank you so much. Members, that concludes all of our presentations today. Thank you for the great questions today. We will continue to move forward and work on a lot of good things this year, and just happy to be chairman of this committee again, and happy to have all of you with me. With that, that concludes the agenda. If there's no further business before the committee, seeing none, Ranking Member Hart moves we rise, and without objection, the meeting is adjourned.